Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
And we got a big box of stuff for Bootsy from Carol and Ed in Stanfield, North Carolina. Here are some odds and ends you might find useful as a prize closet fodder. Most have absolutely no value whatsoever, except perhaps the RG3 travel mug, which should make everyone laugh at least. We had a taker on that, which is more people than have taken
the mug's
Bud
already been
Light
broken.
Orange.
Yeah,
it's on the DL.
Was it broken in week 5?
Yeah, week 1.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
Alrighty then, this is the penultimate show of the second season of the Tony Kornheiser
5 left.
Podcast. No, one left after this.
You said
penultimate. Oh. Penultimate. That tomorrow will be the ultimate. And we'll tell you tomorrow about our plans to continue doing stuff during the summer. Just not for breakfast for a while. Gary Braun is here. Chris Saliza is here. Michael Kornheiser is here. Our fabulous intern, Marcus, is here. Nigel's going to run the board and do the news. This is we're at Chatter at the corner of Wisconsin Avenue and Jennifer Streets Northwest in Friendship Heights. Applaud yourselves. We have a lot of people here.
Yeah,
very,
very welcome. Nice.
Give it up.
Nice crowd. Let me thank. Let me do some business. And the first order of business is I don't have copy on this dinner, this beer pairings dinner on July 9th.
The flying dog dinner.
The
right?
flying, yeah, the dogfish head.
Dogfish head.
Dogfish head, not flying dog. The dogfish head, Calvert Ridley, La Cheeserie dinner on July 9th. There are 35 seats available. It's all inclusive, including the tip. It's $65.
It's a great
deal. I said yesterday, the food is really good and there'll be all sorts of beer.
Food pairings for all the different beers.
Yeah.
So is fondue available?
Fondue is not available. You can bring your own fondue and light yourself on fire if you choose to do that. Stick your head in a giant vat of cheese if you choose to do that. But it's all inclusive. It's, I think, $65. And I said the other day you can call Chatter and make reservations. And my daughter said to me, "You're a moron." No, they can't call. No, they have to go to the website.
Oh, the website. There you go.
Beatle. Go to the window. Go to the website, which I believe is Chatter DC.
Is that on the internet?
www.chatterdc.
Is that just inside the DC line?
I think it's just inside the DC line. Or you can go to the Facebook, I was told. You can go to the Facebook posting of Chatter. I don't know how to do
maybe
that.
Maybe the page.
You have
Facebook
to be skilled
page.
At the internet to do this.
Facebook page.
So this Facebook
is,
page.
I don't know if there, I assume there are some seats left, but this is July 9th and you should do that. Now let me thank some people before we get in the show. Jason Fuse had this made up. This is the set list, right, Gary? The set list from
Jingle
list Fest,
from
and it's signed
Jingle
by
Fest.
All the performers.
That's awesome.
That will go up here on the wall somewhere. Lyle Graves in Nashville, Tennessee, gave us an umbrella from the Nashville Ledger, which we will give out later, which is very, very nice. They came to the show. From Jason Fields, who's the operations manager, is at jason@oldies.com. I know you may not be a man of the book, but I am. I also understand you're a man of the catalog, and boy, do I have a catalog for you, or should I say catalogs. These are CD catalogs. Peruse at your leisure, and if something catches your eye, send me an email with a discount code, Tony K, in the subject line, and I will get you a discount, you know, fit for a big, which
nice.
Is very, very nice. Thank you for all of that stuff. Tell me about the ties that we've got, some of which we've given out.
Yes, the ties from a new tie company called Grant Patton. And I think just deciphering this right now. I believe that might be a take on General Ulysses S. Grant.
And General Patton.
General Patton. Because there's a lot of military themes.
Yes, there are.
Throughout the ties.
Like there's a tie with grenades on it.
Yes. Someone with Army men.
Yeah. Yes, and there's a tie with those hats, the Civil War hats.
Yeah, the Civil War cavalry hats. So,
yes.
They are a new sponsor for At the Movies with Aunt Shanann.
Oh, great.
I'm familiar with that.
But some of the ties.
Why did they send it to me?
Well, because they're a huge fan of yours as well.
That's nice.
Brett Wagner is the bloke that I spoke to. Celeste is also one of the big wigs there.
Oh, great.
And as I said, we're just huge fans of the show. Please give them to everybody on the show. And they even include you, intern Marcus. So if you would like a tie, you've got one.
So nice, Marcus is leaving after tomorrow's show.
It's about time.
Yeah.
Going out on
so
top.
We'll
John
give
Elway.
Time.
Is
we'll
he going back to that fake university?
Yeah, Syracuse. He's going to be a sophomore.
Congrats on that degree. I'm going to light it on fire.
He's a sophomore, not a rising sophomore.
Sophomore. All right. So let's start because Chris is here. Not just because Chris is here, but because lately, or this week on the PTI show, I am essentially being held hostage by the World Cup. And what I mean by that, and I don't mean this in a bad way. I don't mean that I'm fighting to get out or escape.
Yeah, it's just
what happens is these games go on, and the World Cup does one thing, at least one thing. But this one thing they do, which is very, very smart, they start all the games at the same time when there's jeopardy of being kicked out or passing through to the next round. Because they don't want anybody to sit and wait and then strategize what to do with their game. They want to try to ensure, if possible, the integrity of the playing field. So this is a very smart thing they do. So they start at 2, and we sit there till about 4:15, whether or not we're going to have a lead story having to do with the World Cup. The other day, we were waiting on the possibility that both Spain and Portugal, which turned out not to be true, even in theory, it turned out not to be true, waiting on the possibility that Spain and Portugal could both be eliminated. So we sat and we sat and we sat. They both went through. That was not a mention in the show. Yesterday, we sat and waited on Argentina, thinking which is the best story. Well, the best story is Argentina being eliminated. Messi being eliminated is the best story because Wilbon hates Messi and has hated Messi for years for reasons.
What is that based on?
I don't know. Most of Wilbon's hates have to do with you either said something bad about Jordan or Kobe at some point in your life.
That seems unlikely.
Or you lived in Chicago, in which case he loves you.
Yes.
If you passed through Chicago. So I don't know. I don't know about why he hates Messi as much as he did. So our best story would be if Messi was eliminated. But in fact, a good story was Argentina winning, particularly winning late. And Messi scored the first goal. And even I, and I'm not Mr. Soccer, and I don't never claim to be, but he received this pass, which he caught on his left calf, bounced off his left toe, moved it to his foot, and shot it at about 7,000 miles an hour.
They can rocket the ball.
I mean, yeah. I mean, it was beautiful. So Wilbon, of course, says, well, he didn't score the winner. Like, oh, okay. He didn't Come on.
I'm not going to pull the, like, soccer is a beautiful game thing.
Please,
but no. I will say.
But hopefully you'll get right who plays for whom.
Yeah, I did make a mistake on that.
Yes,
and
you did.
My gosh.
Yes, you did.
Woo!
Someone reminded you of that today?
Oh,
anyone
wow.
on Twitter get in touch with you?
The nice thing is the tone people take.
That's a great goal.
Yes. And the thing that is different, you've made this point, the thing that is different about soccer is there are 11 people out there, 10 field players. It's not the basketball comp doesn't work.
No, it's not the same.
You can run a play for LeBron James every – you can throw the ball into him every single play.
Yes.
It is very hard for one soccer player to get the ball. If you watch the last 20 minutes of the Nigeria game, I'd never seen this before. They literally had 5 people around Messi at all times, which is what they should have done.
That's right.
Because he's the guy who
But they got
can
beat
hurt
by
you.
Another guy.
But they got beat by the guy who, in truth, handballed it five minutes before in
and
Nigeria's penalty box, and they should have had another penalty kick, and they looked at it, and it wasn't. I just think at the end of that game, you saw Javier Mascherano, who is the center back.
You hear that? That's people screaming for the World Cup.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Javier Mascherano, the center back, and Messi hugging, and you realize the weight and pressure that is on these guys. I mean, it's
and
if the country and the flashing to Maradona every 15 seconds when something bad happens.
I don't think it's fair. I think the World Cup is better served when the great stars go through.
Yeah.
When Messi and Ronaldo and Neymar and anybody else I might be able to name, which is nobody. When they go through, and so you have people to look at that you know. But these people are given far too much credit for what they do and far too much blame for what they don't do. It's outrageous. But here's the question that I had, and I asked this in the newsroom yesterday. I didn't want to make a big deal about it because everybody knows I don't think they try to score enough. But in the last 8 to 10 minutes of a game, they're trying to score all the time.
Yeah, correct.
It's like the alarm went off, and now we're going to try and score. It seems to me there's a very high percentage of goals that are scored late, very late in soccer. Now, this indicates to me, of course, if you tried a little harder to score, you might be able to do it earlier. But what is pointed out to me is the high percentage of goals are scored by the substitutes because they are
Less tired. Yeah, they're less tired. So I think that is true. I also think in soccer more than in other sports, although regular season NBA I think is like this, there's a feeling out, an extended feeling out period early in games where I think they tend to play much more defensively,
right?
Just sort of don't get scored on, test the other team a little. These are in games in which the talent is relatively equal. In there's a lot of soccer where it's not. I mean, you have basically eight big clubs across Europe that compete with one another. The other teams in their leagues just can't match them financially and talent-wise. But in a game of equal ability, there is a lot of testing out. I mean, I would say if you watch Messi in the first 15 minutes of any game, he does not run around all that much. He is sort of looking around, seeing how they're going to play.
And
he is not sprinting around, which is why he is often criticized.
Can I ask the obvious question? If that is a pattern, if there are two discernible patterns, that there's feeling out early and there's frenzy late, why don't you frenzy early and get up 2-0?
Because it's basically insurmountable if you're up 2-0 or 3-0. I agree.
Right. Why don't you do that?
I think
why don't you put all your energy out there early?
That and the diving are the two things that I continue, even though I really do like soccer a lot and watched all of that game, Argentina, Nigeria. When you watch Brazil, it's difficult to watch. Like Neymar, obviously, is hugely talented, but it's hard to watch because he falls over every 2 seconds and acts as though he has compound fractured his leg on every play, and he's up 2 seconds later trying to score. So I agree. I don't understand the tactics piece of it.
So we ended up leading with that. I mean, that's what we did, which is fine.
What did Wilbon say? I didn't watch.
Wilbon, you know, he's not in love with Messi. I mean, he's not. He reluctantly said this is probably good for the World Cup that they moved on, but he's not.
And remember, we talked the other day about the Croatia-Iceland, and if they lay down and let Iceland beat them, that would have kept Argentina out, which they didn't.
Well, Argentina was in with a win.
That's right. They were in with a win.
Yeah, the fact that they got the
they were in with a win. Iceland, it didn't matter.
Oh, because Iceland, Nigeria.
If Nigeria tied or won, they were in. If Argentina won outright,
this is just more thought than I've given to either Nigeria or Iceland as countries in my entire life.
Oh, you're an ugly American.
You know, yes, that's what Wilbon's position is, that I'm a terrible isolationist. I said, wait, being critical of an entertainment entity in front of me does not make me an isolationist.
Let me remind you, you were elected to be the president of the United States, not president of China.
How many of the 32 countries
can I
pretty good at geometry, could you find on a map?
All.
Really?
Sure.
You could.
Sure.
Okay.
Find them all. Why couldn't I find them all?
I mean, you could find them all, but if you had 32 chances, a time period.
If we gave you,
I know what continent to go to, and I know basically where in the continent, so I would just point and say
Senegal.
It's in Africa.
What part?
Right, but if I had a map with every country of the world, there's no way you could go 32 for 32.
Well,
won't
Won't you label each country so I could see where it is?
No. If it was unlabeled, that's the whole
Senegal's
point.
Senegal's in Africa.
No,
Nigeria's
but you know what?
Africa.
If you had each country sort of
in the group.
Do you know what surprised me?
Because he knows how many teams are in Africa.
Here's what surprised me. Here's what surprised me yesterday, because we were talking about this in terms of population. Nigeria is much more populated than I thought. I didn't realize there were that many people. Nigeria, I said, you have to take out the North African countries where there's a tremendous amount of population and where there really is, there are cultural differences between the North African countries.
186 million.
Holy moly.
So I think they have Nigeria, I believe, has the second most people in all of Africa.
South Africa?
No, they're ahead of South Africa. They have more people in South Africa.
I could get you on a flight.
I didn't realize that. I didn't realize that it was that popular.
Me neither.
Yeah, you know. South Africa only 56.
Senegal, I'm going to take a guess that Senegal is in East Africa.
Senegal has that French influence.
Yeah, I was going to guess East Africa, but I don't know. But I could find, I think, well, you know what would be hard for me, honestly? Croatia, because of the divisions of all of those states now. The finding, like, if you just gave me an outline, I probably couldn't find Croatia.
Right.
But I'm good with France and England.
Yeah.
You know, I'm good with Peru.
West Africa,
I'm good with
Senegal.
Mexico.
I nailed it. I said East Africa.
Well, you were looking at the map
the wrong
upside down.
Side.
Well, it's east of something.
I was on the wrong side. Everything's east of something, and it's 5 o'clock somewhere. And I can't.
Except in Newfoundland, where it's 5:30.
I was going to get to the Nets. I can't even get to the Nets. I would urge people to now watch the
round of 16 games. Argentina.
Well, no, I don't. I'm off.
That's right.
Fantastic. I don't have to watch anymore.
Argentina will now play France. That is a very good game.
There's no rivalry in the world. Nothing says hatred like Argentina and France.
I don't know that that's right.
Argentina and England.
If you love America, you can't watch World Cup on July 4th.
I will.
Yeah. Well,
what are you talking about?
What do you mean?
Is that a loyalty test?
I think it is.
That's craziness. You can watch. You know what you can't watch, though, when you watch World Cup, honestly? You can't watch the MLS anymore. Because it isn't any good.
It's like a children's game.
It isn't
better than it used to be, but it's still not.
No, it's not as good as these guys.
Not even close.
I'm done. When we return, we'll ask Abby Lowell about the yesterday Supreme Court decision upholding what appears to be what is criticized as being a ban on a specific group of people, Muslims, and what is defended as being something that will save, you know, America and make it make your fears go away. We'll talk to Abby about that because I'm not smart enough to know about it myself. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Buffalo Trace ad. I got an email, a text rather, from Howard Fineman yesterday congratulating me on advertising for Buffalo Trace, because Howard
went
to school, you know, at the University of Louisville.
Oh yes,
and
that's
he became a bourbon drinker at that point, and is, you know, is rather a savant when it comes to bourbons. And the copy says the highlighted points are where we would really like the host to elaborate. We'd like them to talk about the flavors they taste, and we'd like them to talk about how they like to enjoy their bourbon or the different ways to drink bourbon. I guess. Well, the different ways.
Quickly what, and more quickly?
Through a straw? Kidding. Or an experience or anecdote on a time they were enjoying bourbon. And this starts with, now this is something I'm going to read. I would not write this because I don't really understand how the sort of notes that wines and bourbons and scotches are supposed to.
Well, you tasted the bourbon.
I did, and I'll get to that. Buffalo Trace's deep amber whiskey has a complex aroma of vanilla, mint, and molasses. Pleasantly sweet to the taste with notes of brown sugar. How come you dance so good? And spice that give way to oak, toffee, dark fruit, and anise. The whiskey finishes long and smooth with serious depth. I don't know what that means. What does it mean to finish?
You were talking...
What does that mean?
In the back of your
After
palate.
After you swallowed it, well, back of your...
You were talking about that when you drank it.
Here's
you said
what
it
I
felt
said.
Deep.
It felt very deep. Yeah. And for me, it had... It reminded me of pine.
You got the wood.
Pine,
right.
Which I like, and the deep leather of a baseball glove.
That's right.
And
yeah.
Some people were horrified when I said that, but these are things I like.
Yeah.
That was evocative for me. That made me happy.
Right.
You know, pine and baseball gloves make me happy. I don't know what makes you happy. You're not reading the ad. I am. Buffalo Trace,
the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Buffalo Trace is a bourbon you can drink neat on the rocks or in cocktails like the Manhattan or the Old Fashioned. Bourbon is America's native spirit. This is interesting to me. It must be made in the United States with at least 51% of corn and aged in new charred oak barrels. No additives or coloring. To be labeled straight Kentucky straight bourbon whiskey, the spirit must be made in Kentucky, well, that figures, and be aged a minimum of 2 years. An award-winning whiskey, Buffalo Trace Bourbon is a leading premium brand made at the legendary 200-year-old Buffalo Trace Distillery. And you were familiar with this because we were talking about Mr.
I'm
Lee.
A bourbon drinker.
Yeah, Mr. Lee. And
Elmer
that was
T. Lee, yeah.
Yeah, and that was that didn't.
That's like their one of their super premium bottles. I think they have the Poppy Van Winkle, too, which is a.
Yeah, I've heard about that, where those bottles go for $1,000 each.
Yeah.
More recently, Buffalo Trace Distillery won Whiskey Magazine's 2018 Distiller of the Year honor, and it is made at the home of bourbon legends like E.H. Taylor Jr., George T. Stagg, Albert B. Blanton, William LaRue Weller, and Elmer T. Lee. Now, those names are lost on me, but it does seem to me lately, as people get snobbier about what they do, that a certain amount of history is something that people want to gather about those things they like, whether it's clothing or cars or now certain types of liquors. And they can and that history fuels them in, not debate, but in reasonable conversation.
Yes.
If you told George C. Stagg, I know Amos Alonzo Stagg. You know that? I mean, that's what I've got. My whole knowledge is sports. It's not this. So I find this interesting. So if you follow Bourbon Trace on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, you'll get all of these things. You'll get these things. And it was quite good. And you're a bourbon guy, and you like it a lot.
Yeah, it's great. So if you can get it.
It's hard to get.
And you can.
It's good stuff.
Why would they advertise if you're not selling
it? Well, Chris, it's funny. You say it can be got, yet 3 days ago I said it's hard to get, and I still haven't gotten any.
Oh.
So it is apparently a little harder than you think.
Oh, so you're looking for free. All right, that's it.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show. Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is sent to us by Steve Edelman in Cleveland, Ohio. It's a song written by his son, Andy Edelman, performed by the band to which he belongs, Sweet Chicle, C-H-I-C-L-E, rhymes with tickle. It's a conglomerate of Chicago and Cleveland. Band members live in Chicago. They're either from Chicago or Cleveland transplants, but of course Wilbon already knew that. While sports animosity exists between the two cities, given the Cubs over the Indians in the 2016 World Series and the Cavs over the Bulls 2015 playoffs when LeBron relegated David Black to an interested bystander in Game 4, this band is a musical equivalent of Can't We All Just Get Along, which is exactly what we're going to talk to Abby about. Abby Lowell, the smartest man in Washington, joins us now on his way somewhere.
Undisclosed location.
Yeah. By a 5-4 decision yesterday, the Supreme Court of the United States of America upheld a ban on certain people from certain countries coming into the United States. Can you tell me, and this is a fairly complex question for me, can you tell me what this ruling means? And because various forms of this travel ban seem to have been previously in the last couple of years struck down by various federal judges, can you tell me why this one, was it rewritten to make it acceptable?
Yeah, so this is the legal theory that we all know from our childhood. At first you don't succeed, try again, right?
Yeah,
this is
yeah.
The third attempt.
Yeah.
So what the 5-4 decision means is really a vindication of the power of the presidency. The opinion of the majority made very clear, Tony, and it's interesting when they do this, you can even tell among the conservative judges, including the Chief Justice, that there are comments saying that they didn't really like what the president says and what the flavor of it is, but they ruled on the power of the presidency as opposed to the power of Donald Trump. And in the area of foreign affairs, national security, border control, it has got to be the area where historically the president's power is at its greatest. And that's really what they said. What was interesting is that lower courts had basically said you can look behind the president's actions to see whether his words in the campaign or his tweets or, you know, in his sleep basically indicated a level of discrimination that then made what would have otherwise been neutral on its face objectionable because of its motive. And we do that in other cases, like we'll talk about maybe the Baker's case in Colorado, and I'll explain the difference in a second.
Yes.
But for the president's power, when it comes to these areas, the court basically said a neutral action on its face in keeping with his very strong power in this regard is something they don't look behind. Now, they condemned some of his things in subtle ways, although the two loudest dissenters, Justices Sotomayor and Justice Ginsburg, were not very quiet about what they said. But even the majority said, I'm not sure I agree with the policy or his statement. So if everybody wanted to understand this opinion, it really is in keeping with a long set of opinions about the president's power. As to why this one prevailed, remember the administration did tweak it. They tweaked it. There's other countries involved. There's Venezuela involved. There's North Korea involved. And I think the court decided that you just can't look at somebody like what President Trump says, because if that's the case, every action he takes could be attackable for discrimination.
Right. So the people on the other side of this are loudly proclaiming this is a religious ban. And you're saying that the Supreme Court, in looking at this, did not, you know, said that something was more obviously more important than that and chose to not deal with it being a religious ban. Because they had wiggle room.
That's right. But I think you could say it a different way. What the court said is that you take a ban that's based on a rational basis. In this area of presidential power, there is a standard of review by courts. And the more power a branch has, another branch can only look at it and scrutinize it in what's called looking for what's a rational basis. Whereas if it's at a different level of action or more discriminatory, courts can look at it in terms of a higher scrutinizing standard. And here what the court said is we look at this in its mildest form of review, one branch looking at the actions of another.
Mm-hmm.
And in that standard, this on its face is something that fits into his power as the president.
Okay.
So that's why they did it.
Okay. So this is the law of the land. Now, if
the law of the land, and there's another part of this too that was interesting for lawyers anyway, and for all of the people who listen to you and me doing our banter on legal geekism, as to there's a subpart, which is can one district court, lower court, trial court, issue an injunction? Because these courts sit in places like the Northern District of New York or the Southern District of Texas. And the question was, can a judge there issue an injunction that rules across the entire United States? Well, that's an interesting question that didn't have to be resolved because now the highest court has said this particular ban has no effect.
Okay. So now I guess the comeback for me is if you were to ask any civic student in high school, what is the basis of the United States? They would say, give us your tired, your poor. You know, they would quote the Statue of Liberty and Emma Lazarus. And how does this work? If that is our principle, if that's what we stand for, how does this work?
Isn't it true that the aspirational statement of the lady that sits in the New York Harbor is what we say we do, but if throughout history, whether it was people fleeing Europe before World War II or people at the end of the 19th century also coming north from Central and South America, it's never been everybody gets in. It's
right.
Never been we open up every door, every gate, every port to everybody. And that's where the difference between the aspiration and the rules apply. And what this challenge to this was this gate should not be closed based on a discriminatory view that, for example, these countries with largely Muslim populations are more security threatening than some others.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the court had to decide. So, yes,
okay.
Is our premise that, yeah, we are come and get, you know, come to the United States. And it's happening now, right? Look what's happening at the border of Texas. It's like,
sure.
Should all those people,
sure.
No matter whether they are coming for purposes of getting a job or a political asylum, should they just be allowed in, period, or should there be some control or some process? That's the tension. And you can have both sides say, look, we want people to come in, but there should be some process. Here, it wasn't a process issue. It was what was the motive issue.
Okay. Some people were saying last night, this is Neil Gorsuch. This is the ability that Donald Trump had to appoint a justice. Yeah, which Barack Obama did not have. He nominated Merrick Garland, but that it never came to a vote. Do you agree with that?
This might be one of the great, most recent examples of the difference between what the Republicans did in blocking, you know, Merrick Garland. When you think about it, because, you know, no one can predict what a justice might do. But if you could try, you have a hard time imagining that Merrick Garland would have voted with the majority on this.
Mm-hmm.
And here is a 5-4 decision. By the way, there's been a number of 5-4 decisions in this term on very important issues. And there's two more to go. So who knows what will happen there? I need to point that out, as you just did, that it is a stark demonstration of what was the result of that move by the Republicans to block Merrick Garland. Would have been probably a different outcome. It also shows the importance of the presidency in presidential elections. And what a lot of people are worried about is whether or not now Justice Kennedy is going to announce his resignation and give President Trump another court position, which would be to the right of where Justice Kennedy is. So we'll all be watching in the next few weeks.
So, I mean, the way you explain this to me, that it upholds the power of the presidency as somebody who makes a policy for the country, domestic and foreign policy, I can live with that. I have a little bit more of a problem, I guess, and this is not a court case yet, and I don't know if it will get to be a court case, or maybe it already was a court case from the 1950s or so. Can a restaurant not serve Sarah Sanders? Can they say, you got
to
go?
Let's unpack this. Again, going back to, you got to always start with the legal premise, right? The legal premise, I think, if you look at history, has now been the premise of where Marie Antoinette said, let them eat cake.
Right.
To the Colorado case where you tried to have your cake and eat it too.
Yeah.
To the Sarah Sanders issue, which is you can't even get in till you have the cake.
Right.
So there we are. And there is a difference. If you want to now talk about the Colorado Bakers case, people, again, are pointing to that as yet another sign. But remember that case. It was not saying that the discrimination that was alleged was okay, but it was a process case in which it said that the Colorado Civil Rights Commission had already stated out loud before they heard the case their antipathy to religious freedom on the behalf of the baker being something to give weight to. And so they said this was a prejudicial process. And there, again, the justices who wrote, including especially Justice Kennedy, went out of his way to affirm the rights of people to be served equally. And so it went back to the court to determine whether or not there could be a more fair process in which the people making the decision hadn't stated out loud that we disdain people who pretend that they're using religious freedom as a way to deny people the right to be served.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a process question. Now, as to Sarah Sanders and anybody else, think of the difference as follows. The difference is in part that when you are discriminating on basis of race, on the basis of ethnicity, on the basis of sexual preference, that is considered to be in a category that we have the most suspect classifications, the highest level of review under the Equal Protection Clause. So rather than having a rational basis, the government has to show an extraordinarily important reason for any discrimination. That's what is at stake at the underlying Colorado Baker. With Sarah Sanders and others, one might argue that what happened was that she was being penalized for her freedom of speech, for her, you know, speech, First Amendment. On the other hand, you know, people can say, Tony, I don't want you in my restaurant because I don't like your jokes.
Right.
I don't like you because, you know, you and Wilbon are yesterday's news. And you don't have the right to object to that.
I don't.
In a private setting. And the question was, as to Sarah Sanders, is it because what she says, what she did, her political affiliation or association with the president? And so some of that would be okay and some of it wouldn't be okay.
I don't know. The road we're going on where people are urged to stand up and heckle other people, not at their jobs, but where they're eating. I don't like this. I don't like the road. I don't know that there's any legal protection there, but I don't like that road we're going down. How about you?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think this is one of somebody way smarter than I have pointed out in commentary that this is just a perfect barometer of what's happened to the discourse and the situation in our country. And it is, and it's pathetic. And while we all disagree with one another, and certainly we can disagree with both so many things that this administration says and does, that would be the case, I'm sure, by people who felt the same way about President Obama. The fact is that when we start taking these matters into our own hands, it's only going to devolve and go further down, and that's really a shame. So you're right. Is this a law case? I'm not sure it's a law case yet.
Right.
And what should really happen is what you're doing. I think that the public discourse here is creating an imperative for people not to do this because it is a slippery slope, right? I mean, so the Red Hen in Virginia says, I ain't going to do Sarah Sanders. And somebody, you know, in some other place, in a conservative place, says, I'm not going to let some liberal senator come in and campaign, whether it's, you know, on the presidential campaign or what. So that's the issue. And I think also, by the way, it is okay that the public rises up and creates the norm as opposed to everything going into court. Having said that, I think this is a very bad precedent and it could implicate legal rights for sure. Mm-hmm. Because everybody should be able to get into the restaurant and order the cake.
Thank you, Abby. Thanks so much. Abby Lowell, okay. Boys and Girls, who's, you know, the smartest man in Washington.
Seal it down.
That's why we do this. We will take a break. When we come back, we will have news. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show. The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Sonos ad. I'll just read it. Hey there. We hope you enjoy your Sonos home sound system. Our play base will put you at the center of all your favorite TV shows and movies. Plus, it plays music so you can go from watching the game to blasting your victory song. I add parenthetically if you have, unless you're Max Scherzer, because they don't score for him.
No, they
They two runs in four games total. They don't score for him. The new Sonos One blends great sound with Amazon Alexa, so you can use your voice to control music, podcasts, and more. Just ask. We chose you to do this ad because we like how your personality comes through on your own podcast. I guess they're talking to me. We'd like to hear you talk about your personal experience with Sonos in your own voice and engage with your listeners the way you would on any other topic. Michael got me this, right? Michael plugged it in.
I did.
Now I don't have to turn it up to like 47 to hear something because it's throughout the entire room I can hear right. The TV. I don't know how to integrate it with Alexa. I don't know how to do that.
I'm still smiling because for the play base, you have to turn off the internal speakers on your TV. And we showed up to your house a couple days later. We turn on the TV. It is deafening because you didn't know how to sync it back.
I don't know how to do that every once in a while. And sometimes the baby boy starts putting his hands on things and then the sound
don't blame him.
It's gone.
No touching.
It's gone. Yeah. How has the play base changed the way you and your family enjoy TV? Well, it's fine, except it's like everything else. When you buy a car, all cars are pretty much the same. What you're buying is electronic gizmos.
Yep. Yep.
Like, I don't use them. They don't mean anything to me. I'm using 1% of the capability of the Sonos home sound system. I have an Alexa, and most of the time when there's something going on, I just go, Alexa, off. I mean, just off.
Enough.
Let me count in peace. Sonos Beam is the smart, compact soundbar for your TV, great for mid-sized rooms and TVs. Beam is Amazon Alexa-enabled for easy voice control and delivers brilliant, immersive sound from movies, shows, and video games, plus music, podcasts, and more. It's only $399 for bolder sound in larger rooms. Sonos also has Play Bar and Play Bass. You can pre-order Sonos Beam now at Sonos, S-O-N-O-S.com, and start your smart home sound system.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is sent to us by Abby Forstein, who writes, on Sunday, July 1st, the woman with whom I'm related by marriage and I will be celebrating our first wedding anniversary. As a wedding present, my wife's youngest sister recorded an original song for us. Beautiful song. Feels like something you would hear at the end of a Wes Anderson movie. The chorus is so beautiful.
Oh, wow.
Her sister, Erin Leno, is in a band called Hollywood Makeout. Their EP, Speedo Spider, can be found on iTunes and Spotify, and that EP, as well as their first album, Bikini Bat, can be found on their Bandcamp page. As far as my first year of marriage, I will admit it has not been easy. During our first year, we both suffered from months of unemployment. Had to have some hard discussions during the past 12 months. However, despite the hardships and setbacks, my love for her hasn't weakened because her love for me has stayed the same. It's very nice. Wow. This is very, very
nice. That's lovely.
P.S., can I get a shout-out at the end of PTI someday? No.
No.
No, absolutely no. Not.
No.
P.P.S., ask Chris Saliza to give Brian Stelter a big kiss on the head for me. Brian and I are Twitter friends, so it's not creepy or weird. Actually, it is creepy and weird.
Well, I kiss him pretty regularly, so that's no issue. Brian Stelter, great guy. Good follow on the Twitter machine. Covers media. At Brian Stelter.
Can I get a shout-out on PTI? It can only be answered by sure. Just keep watching. I'll get to it one of these days.
Yeah, Michael, if people want to send their music or their sister's music or, you know, anybody's music, how do they do it?
Send us your music by emailing it to the show at jingles at tonycornheiserhow.com.
And so Nigel has news.
Wait, can I have a quick question before you get to news, if that's okay.
No, we're not going
to
play.
This is directed to Gary and Chris because they have young kids.
Sure.
We are taking the baby boy on his first international flight next week.
Well, Gary's kids are now all teenagers.
Vodka.
Michael, I'll handle this.
He's had this experience in the last decade.
Did you get him his own seat?
Ooh, I don't know. I think so. I think you have to because he travels with
no,
a big
under
car.
Two,
no,
they
you,
can fly
under
in
under two,
your lap.
You cannot do that. They
oh,
can
I should have asked.
If you didn't get him a seat, pay all the money in the world to get one. I'm not kidding. I remember a cross-country flight from California back to D.C. with my older son when he was 18 months. It was the worst 6 hours of my life. Just buy him. I seriously don't care how much it costs. Buy him a seat. That's
well,
the only
well, Liz
thing.
Would be holding him.
Then you
But you can put all the crap you need in the seat.
Ooh.
Yep.
So you're not having
you
to get
that.
Up and down and reach
you want
down.
That. It's well worth it.
Charge
first
it to
class,
Chan.
Right?
Charge it to Chan and Moni.
First class. Yeah. That's good.
Chan and Moni would be happy to do that for the baby.
Yeah.
Cheap private plane.
But it's going to be it's going to be tough. Not going to lie.
So was that you didn't even get out a question because Chris interrupted you or did he
answer
your
question? I wanted some advice to, to how to make the flight enjoyable
that's
his parents.
Great advice.
How to make the flight enjoyable, you go on another flight. That would make it enjoyable.
Or you stay home.
Does he have a device of any sort?
He's not
he's
like
one.
A, he's
got an
years
ankle
old.
Bracelet.
He's got a box.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I can't bring his box with him.
Bring the cardboard
the box.
Oh, yeah. In there the annals of great parenting, I just load my kids' devices up with like 500 Tom and Jerry cartoons.
Here's a good one. Does he something to eat? I guess he eats maybe like those puff balls. He doesn't gummies or anything.
Yeah,
yet.
No gummies yet.
But takeoff and landing, give him something to be eating because you want to keep him swallowing
ears.
So that because
he's not had
the pressure
any, he's had no ear issues yet. But historically, I've had ear issues.
Oh well, then yes,
then
he can't chew gum,
puffs.
But do that.
Yeah, keep him swallowing up and down. You know, as you take off and land, so
yep, because it will hurt him.
And annoy the people like Chris.
And then,
thank you,
and I don't
T.
like
Barry
that.
Brazelton. Thank you so much
and
for
I
this
don't,
interlude.
I don't like that when children cry. I usually go up to the parents and I say, can you do something about this?
Remove this child from my
this
presence.
This feels like a your problem, not a my problem.
Yeah, okay.
Mr. Tony, we will start off. We have a statement from the mayor of Great Falls. He said, I am pleased and happy to report the news that we have, in fact, caught and killed a large predator was supposedly injuring some hikers. But as you can see, it's a beautiful day. The hiking paths are open. People are having a wonderful time.
Amity!
This will be our biggest 4th of July ever. Amity,
yes,
as you know,
Amity.
Means friendship.
Yes,
that's
Amity.
From Mayor Larry Vaughn of
Fantastic.
Great Falls. So there you go.
Good for you.
You alluded to this a little earlier. Tough stretch for the Nats.
They stink!
They have scored.
They
and you
got
said
one
this.
Hit last night. They've been shut out twice by Tampa.
Three hits yesterday afternoon.
Yes. Yeah. They've scored two runs for Max Scherzer in his last four starts combined.
He's 10-4. He should be 13-1.
At the very least, yes.
The last time they couldn't get him to win, they had a man on third with nobody out, and they couldn't get Defoe in, so Scherzer had to get a no decision. He went seven innings. He gave up one run on four hits. His ERA is 2.04, and they do nothing for him.
No.
They're 5-11 in their last 16. They've been shut out six times in their last 16.
That's
at some point, somebody's going to question the manager.
Yeah.
At some point.
Well, in good news, they have four on the road against a divisional opponent.
Philadelphia coming up. No. Starting tonight?
I believe it is tonight, yes.
They're terrible Tanner. At the moment. Yeah, at the moment.
Four games over.
I think it's the first time, however, if we're going to go glass half full, that both Daniel Murphy and Bryce Harper are hitting 200 for the first time this year. Now Murphy up to 200.
It looks like the Wizards...
I need to talk about this.
Yes, have made a change on their team. The Polish Hammer, Marcin Gortat, is now going to the
Wizards. Very pleasant fellow.
Yeah.
He's very good ambassador for his team. Yes. John Wall said, get rid of him.
They did not.
John Wall said, get him out of my sight.
Yes.
When you say, I want an athletic big man, you're saying to the general manager, get this guy out of here.
Yes.
Even though for 4 or 5 years, he was a very solid player.
Yeah, he was.
He was critical of Wall, because when they didn't have Wall and they were winning games, he talked about how the team was doing well.
Yeah.
There's no question that he was just laying it to Wall at that point. And Wall said, really? Get out. Now, he gets sent to L.A., which is not a terrible thing. And they bring in Austin Rivers, who at one point had a very important shot for Duke. And that's what I remember about Austin Rivers.
Yep.
He hit a big shot for Duke.
I was surprised to see his average. And
higher than I thought.
Yeah.
15.1 points a game and 37.8 from three. So here's as you look forward on this, these are the possibilities, it seems to me, and I will even defer to Chris if he has a different idea, that you could see Satoransky moved because Rivers is a better scorer than Satoransky and fulfills the same role. Or what if they packaged Beal and somebody else and went after somebody really big?
That's big enough to justify that.
That's where I think we're going. Don't you feel
that? Yes.
Like,
when I saw this move, it felt like the middle step or the first step of a several-step plan. And I don't know whether that plan is to try to get Boogie Cousins.
That's exactly what I'm thinking.
I mean, Gortat makes sense to get rid of because Wall was done with him. But the issue they have, and I don't know how you solve this, and Satoransky candidly doesn't solve this, is you have Mahimney at, I think, 18 a year.
Terrible.
18 million
a waste
year,
of money.
Otto is making like
24. Oh, maxing out that guy?
And so either of them is problematic. The Gortat Rivers trade made sense because they basically made the same amount of money, which is a lot.
Yeah.
They just have to...
But it feels like
they're doing
something.
I don't know
we're
who's
on
big enough to justify what you're talking
and,
about. I just thought there was, okay, well, now they got room in the middle, and they've made it easy for the Clippers to let DeAndre Jordan go. That's right where I went. I thought, bring DeAndre Jordan here.
Okay.
I still think they're going to try. I mean, I think this talk of LeBron is ridiculous. I think it's not going to happen.
Isn't
I think
LeBron
it's
close
LA
friends
or,
with
LA
Austin
or,
Rivers?
Yes, they're very close.
I mean, who's big enough to justify what you're suggesting?
Boogie Cousins. San Antonio or the
Kawhi.
Guy in or
to make
Kawhi
a run at Kawhi.
You also have a guy in Oakland who's opting out, although to stay.
We know he's not Kevin interested Durant. In coming
yeah.
here.
Yeah.
That's what I thought. I mean, I don't think it's to clear cap. They still would have to get rid of, I think, both Mahimney and Porter, but certainly
can't get
one
rid of
the two. Yeah.
Cannot get rid of Mahimney's useless.
And
then nobody wants
short
him.
Short of that, you try to. I guess you either get rid of Beal or Wall, but then what's the point?
Beal
if
is
you
the
do
one.
That,
Beal is the one. Beal is the one who brings something. Beal
right.
and brings something
right.
good.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead. What else?
Back to the World Cup. Diego Maradona is fine. He sent this is after he was attended to by paramedics at World Cup Stadium
That's
in
amazing.
St. Petersburg following Argentina's dramatic victory over Nigeria. He said, "I want to tell everyone that I'm fine. That I am not neither." Neither was I interned. Not sure what that means. In the halftime of the game against Nigeria, my neck hurt a lot, and I suffered a decompensation.
Yeah.
He Same. Gave everybody the finger.
And yeah, there's also a video double of him, birds. The double
Why bird. Why did he do? Who was he doing that he was
People
doing
below that, him who are yeah. mocking him. It's yeah, the best.
Yeah, the Nigerian fans.
Bill Russell
fans.
Did that the other night.
Yeah,
is this to a, Wilbon thinks this is fine.
Robbie Williams did this when
I mean,
he was singing
I don't
the
think this
anthem.
Is fine.
Worth noting, Diego Maradona has probably done enough cocaine to fill this entire building.
Yes. No.
I mean, so, you know, his health.
He is, he's now a block of granite.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah,
he's a
yeah.
square. And much like Roberto Duran.
Yeah.
He is just a square
now. 5'2", 5'4".
And can I just say, the header that he scored against England in that World Cup all those years
hand
ago.
Hand of God.
Was with his hand.
Hand of God.
Yeah. He's, but
bloody
he's
replay.
Got
oh, he also, he did blame, just for the record, the British papers are reporting that he is blaming a wine binge for his collapse.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there you go. Yeah. Now, it was primary night in a lot of states.
Yes.
My analysis is that some people won and other people lost. We will throw it over now to Chris Salizzi at the political desk for a little bit more
what
detailed
were the big
analysis.
Well, you nailed it, Nigel. Back to you, Tom. What? Oh. So the lesson here, the big news is a woman that no one had heard of outside of Queens or the Bronx and candidly, probably some people in there. Her name is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. She's 28 years old. She spent about $100,000, and she beat Joe Crowley, who is a member of the Democratic leadership, had held the 14th District for 10 terms, 20 years.
And was not unpopular.
Nope, and was prepping to basically be the heir apparent to Nancy Pelosi whenever she decides to leave in leadership. She not only beat him, I mean, she beat him pretty good. Now, there was only about 20-something thousand votes
cast. It was UMBC over Virginia.
But, I mean, this is one of the... certainly within the last 20 years, one of the five biggest political upsets. I mean, you're talking about someone who had never run for anything before, was lightly regarded.
Says an avowed socialist.
And a
Democratic socialist,
which is what Bernie Sanders identifies as, by the way. So that's by far the biggest news. It's not just because of that district. It speaks to she ran essentially saying, look, Joe Crowley is fine, but he hasn't really done anything for us. He's a member of the establishment. Do we really want more of that? It shakes up the Democratic leadership in Washington. It speaks to the ongoing sort of fight between the Democratic Party that the Republican Party has already had, and the insurgents won. Donald Trump basically sort of, you know, hostile takeover of the Republican Party. In 2020, you'll see a massive fight between sort of the establishment Democrats and people who are more liberal and more angry at Trump and at their own establishment. So it's a big deal. Maryland, Ben Jealous, former NAACP president, won. He was the lefty candidate in the field. In Colorado, a guy named Jared Polis, a wealthy member of Congress, won. He's not the first, but one of a small number of openly gay politicians who have won a party's nomination for governor. Again, probably the most liberal candidate in that race. So, I mean, there seems to be a pretty clear
trend.
So
let me go to Maryland for a second, because they have a Republican governor, which is an oddity for them. There's been about three in the last 50 years. And Larry Hogan is a relatively popular guy, but he does not have the numbers. I mean, he certainly doesn't have the numbers. How do you think Ben Jealous will do against him?
Well, so
whenever I say Ben Jealous, it makes me giggle. It makes me think of Van Jealous. It makes me think of Chariots of Fire, which makes me happy.
So on its face, Maryland, as you point out, is a state that no Republican should ever be elected governor.
No,
And yet they've had Bob Ehrlich, who beat Kathleen Kennedy Townsend.
And Spiro Agnew.
Spiro Agnew and Larry Hogan.
Yes, they've had three in 50 years.
So I think the numbers are very difficult for Hogan. I think in a year like this, in which we expect it to be a very good Democratic year, history would suggest it is, with the president the Republican president in the White House, not terribly popular, et cetera, et cetera. I think the race will come down to Larry Hogan saying, look, you know, you can attack me as Donald Trump, but you guys know me. I'm not that. I solve problems. Ben Jealous is just another sort of rank and file liberal Democrat. I think it's a hard
extreme
race.
Extreme is how he's labeled him already.
Too lefty.
Yeah.
I think it's a hard race for Larry Hogan.
So do I.
But I would have said that almost no matter who Democrats nominated because of the numbers.
If Ben Jealous does end up winning the governorship of Maryland, what does that mean for the Purple Line? That's the question I think is on everyone's.
Yeah. I don't know, but I can confirm he would be the first governor Jealous.
Okay, that's something, isn't it? Mr. Tony, I want to tell you the story about David Mentzer of Columbus. On June 4th, David walked into a bank. presented a note to the teller demanding money, and it said, "I have a gun."
Not a gub.
Not a gub. Is that an N or a B?
I have a gun.
The teller gave Mensa the money and a dye pack, which I guess is what you get when you get the money.
Yeah.
Mensa took the money and put the dye pack back on the counter.
Like you don't know what you get when you rob a bank.
Right. Then he said, "I want some more money. I want the money in that automatic teller machine
that
you have
that
in the
money.
Lobby. I want that money." To which the teller said, "Well, to access that, I'm actually going to need your driver's license."
Sure, here it is.
So Mensa gave
I'm a moron.
Mensa gave her the driver's license.
Idiot.
She swiped it.
Idiots.
He went and got the issue cast. Shortly thereafter, the police rounded up David Mensa and arrested him. Turns out he had robbed three other banks, so he will now be spending some time behind bars.
He's an imbecile.
Yeah, would not appear to be the smartest bank robber of all time.
Fleet imbecile. All right, that's it. That's all. Oh, I just wanted to mention this. There's a small item in the paper today that Sean Spicer is going for the trifecta.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry, I forgot to mention
Sean this. Spicer is going to have a podcast, and he's got a book coming out, and he's going to have a TV chat show, an interview show.
Sean Spicer's Common Ground.
Which he wanted in a, and it said, the quote was, a bar-like setting. Let him have it here.
Boom.
Yeah.
Let him have it a chatter.
This is a bar-like setting.
Apparently, he invited Michael.
Let's have it a chatter.
He invited Michael Avenatti on to be on his inaugural show. He said, "Oh, thanks, but no thanks."
Sean Spicer, this is the attempt to cash in.
Yes.
Sean Spicer realizing, I've got 11 minutes left. I've got to do something or else I'm done. And this is it. I get it. I mean, I get it. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. Old Guy Radio.
Yes.
Right? Old Guy Radio. And yes. I'll talk about the
Beach
ESPY
Boy
special.
Birthday.
Beach Boy, Bruce Johnston.
Yes.
The last to join the Beach Boys as we knew them a million years ago. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Old Guy Radio for the day. This is a beautiful, beautiful song. It's a Beach Boys song written and performed by Bruce Johnston, who is 76 years old today. This is called Disney Girls. This is a beautiful and evocative song of the culture of the late 1940s and early 1950s. It even mentions Patti Page. Nobody listening to this show has any idea who Patti Page is. But there was a time in America in the area of critical commentary where people like Patti Page and Doris Day sang songs, and they sang them in movies, and when movies mattered in a different way than they do now, when TV was almost still in its infancy and there was no such thing as an internet. So if you became a star, you were really a star. It's not like, you know, and it lasted for a while. It's not like now where stars come and go literally in weeks. And this is a beautiful tune. Bruce Johnston also wrote, I Write the Songs.
Yes.
He wrote that.
For One Mr. Manilow.
Yes, so he did that. So, okay.
This was off the 1971 album Surf's Up. He also included on his 77 solo album Going Public. The full name of the song is Disney Girls 1957. And as you say, and he plays everything on it. He plays the piano, the Moog synthesizer, the mandolin, and the lead vocals. So it's just fantastic.
All right, so the Tiger Tournament starts tomorrow.
Yes.
Is it at Congressional or Avenue?
Avenue.
It's at Avenue. Okay, which is now called
TPC Potomac at Avenel Farms.
Okay. So that's the famous course where Greg Norman, just shamed some guy so terribly. The guy died within 6 months or something like that, 25 years ago. In any case, this is the last year for this tournament. It's sponsored.
Quicken Loans going back to Detroit.
Right. Where the owner of Quicken Loans is the owner of the Cleveland Cavaliers, who lives in Detroit. I mean, he's not a Cleveland guy. Yeah. He's a Detroit guy.
Dan Gilbert.
And very highly thought of there for philanthropic exercises that he's done over some long period of time. So this tournament's gone. This is the last year. Whether it'll be replaced by something else, I don't know. This was at one point the Kemper Open, and then it was the AT&T National. And it's the Tiger Tournament. Full disclosure, it's on CBS this weekend, and it's produced by Lance Barrow, who's a great sports producer of golf and football. And I've asked him for tickets. And a parking pass. So I hope he hears this and comes through.
Vendor lot
very,
parking.
Very nice. Vendor lot.
The secret to every tour event.
This is what I want. Tomorrow, if we get lucky, Peter Costas will be in studio with the Socialite. They are
great.
Very
I have friends. Some swing footage I want him to take a look at.
Yeah, so he could do that for you.
He could break down my swing. That.
Just briefly here.
Doesn't have the time.
This is the Tiger Tournament. Do you think Tiger can win this tournament?
Sure. Why not? It's a second field event.
Right.
You have Ricky Fowler. You have a bunch of young guys. Bigger story for Tiger, he's got a new putter in the bag that you'll see if he'll actually play with during the tournament. But yeah, he's got a chance to win it, but this is one where he has to go this tournament, you need to go low. It's not, you know, traditional, one of those West Coast tournaments that he likes to play where par is a good score. You need to put up some numbers.
When they go low, we go high.
That's how it works.
That's a golf saying, actually.
Yeah. I don't remember him, his history there.
This is a tournament where he normally misses the cut and then leaves and doesn't show up for the trophy ceremony.
Terrific.
Which is in his name.
Yes.
It has a fabulous looking trophy. It looks like the Capitol building. It's just gigantic. It's just a giant hot mess of a silver trophy. So anyway, staying with golf briefly, and this is the John Daly question. John Daly, and I think the word notorious would fit John Daly at this point in his life, is a guy who's won two majors. Right, he won at St. Andrews.
Yeah, that's right.
Won the British Open at St. Andrews, and he won the PGA at Crooked Stick when he was an alternate. I mean, he just got in on the last minute. Everybody has an opinion of John Daly. He's very, very, very well known. He was withdrawn from the U.S. Senior Open because they wouldn't let him use a cart. He wanted to use a cart. He says he has a chronic knee injury, and he says that he falls within the purview of the Americans with Disabilities Act, and so he should be allowed to use a cart. He points out that Scott Verplank, who has diabetes, is being allowed to use a cart. John Daly was allowed last week in a senior tour event to use a cart, and he finished T7, which is a pretty good score, T7. The USGA said, no, we're not giving you the cart. Just to bring you up to date, the most recent time that he injured his knee, it's when his RV was hit in the parking lot of a Hooters in Augusta, Georgia. And I know that would bring a laugh from everybody.
Well,
the combination of RV, parking lot, and Hooters is going to make everybody laugh. Should he be allowed to use a cart, Michael Kornheiser?
Yes. And this is...
You're with Wilbon on this. Well, I'm against this.
But why are you against it?
Because it's a knee injury. We all have knee injuries. You walk. You have a knee injury, you walk.
I fully support his request for the cart. If you listen to the USJ, most of this comes down to the fact that he didn't file in the correct procedure. This just is another example as to how blind they are. They're denying him the use of a golf cart. It is just not the right spin you want in front of this tournament. Give him a cart, celebrate him, let him play. He's going to give you great crowds.
Yep.
You're going to get a lot of great buzz. Maybe you can get some other guys who are on the fringe who can't play. Another big story right now, Freddie Couples is basically admitting his career is over because of his bad back.
Which he's had for 35 years.
But you would do anything you can to get that guy in a golf course because he's been a ambassador for the game.
That's right.
And he draws, this is entertainment at the senior level. This is obviously a serious tournament, but it is entertainment to try and get these guys out on the golf course. You do what you can to let him play.
So you would let him play, Chris?
I'm with Michael, only because I think you've said this before, is you have to acknowledge that there's a performance/entertainment piece of all of this. It is not, if it was sport for sport's sake, and no corporate interest, no entertainment interest, they'd just be playing on a golf course with no fans. I mean, you know, like, once you put it on television, once you have corporate sponsors, once you try to sell merch.
What about the other people who are walking, who have, you know...
Yeah, they're not John Daly. I mean, there's always been two sets of rules for stars and not stars. Yeah. I mean, I don't...
So for those other players, another question would be, why does Tiger Woods or why does John Daly get a preferred tee time? Why am I stuck teeing off at 2:30 in the afternoon when I've got crusty green? So you always have that double standard.
Okay. All right.
It's such... Well, if it's... certainly, I would agree with these guys if really all you care about is the money. But I would say this. It is... unlike the tee time, and typically if you start late today, you're going to start early tomorrow. Unlike the tee time, it is such an advantage to get a cart over the rest of the field who are walking, especially as a senior.
Not really. This is not like driving a golf cart right up to your golf ball. You are on the edge of the course. You still have to have your caddy carrying. It becomes more of a burden. It's like carrying an umbrella. It's just one more thing to look after during your round.
I mean, I you would know better than I. I'm not going to disagree with you, but it would seem to me that these other old bastards are walking 5, 7, 8 miles a day, and this dude maybe is down to 2 or 3. He's already out of shape. He's got a bum knee. If he got the bum knee in a car accident, and this is where it gets tricky for me, it's sort of... You know, it's not like a Casey Martin situation.
Casey Martin deserved a card. He had a degenerative condition.
Right. Yeah, it's
that,
tricky.
I think caused the amputation.
I'm more in line, I think, with you than them on this one. But I don't know enough about the injury. But by the way, let me point out the Tiger Woods thing as far as the Quicken Loan event. Yeah. According to Bovada, he is Ricky Fowler is the favorite at 7-1. Tiger is number 2, 12-1.
Is Phil Mickelson in this one?
No. You got the odds wise. The next names are Leishman, Molinari, Kyle Stanley, Charles Howell III, J.B. Holmes.
That's interesting.
Jimmy Walker, and then you
Dynamite.
Get to names you haven't heard.
Okay. By the way, you mentioned entertainment before. You stressed entertainment.
Yes.
Have you seen commercials for Uncle Drew? This looks like the worst.
It couldn't be worse.
This might be the worst movie ever.
Wasn't that a Pepsi commercial?
Yes. My boys. What? So it's Kyrie Irving dressing up as an old man and going to play pickup basketball, and he's still Kyrie Irving, so he's amazing. My boys, who
accredited
love,
actor Kyrie
who
Irving,
love. The Uncle Drew thing, and like I had to explain like 500 times, like it's so Kyrie terrible. Irving. He's just dressed up as an old man. My son, who's 9, said, "Why are they making this a movie?" And I was like, "Well, there's your problem right there."
All right, so let me get to what Wilbon and I did yesterday. We did our ESPY special, will air at some time. The ESPYs are usually the day after the Major League Baseball All-Star Game.
I believe so.
That
yes.
Wednesday, they're usually
filling that gap.
So this will air before that. When I don't really know. I did what I think you're supposed to do for the ESPY nominating special. I wore a tuxedo. Wilbon didn't. I just felt, why aren't you wearing a tuxedo? And he explained,
it's a black tie event.
So I was wearing a tuxedo. Looked very foolish. Happy to have looked foolish. And
did you go with yellow?
No, I've got a regular tuxedo.
Tuxedo
so
t-shirt?
There are a lot of different categories, and one of them is like, you know, best play, and I felt that the two best
Death
plays.
Death of a Salesman.
Doubt.
Well, Death of a Salesman is the best American play ever. But I felt that the two standout plays of the year were, one was the Case Keenum to Stephon Diggs.
Yeah.
Because it can't happen.
Can't happen.
Because the DB ruins the play. This is an utterly impossible play that cannot go for a touchdown. So that was Wilbon thought that was one. I actually said that was two because I thought Tua's touchdown pass in overtime, because it won a championship for Alabama. That ended it. Stephon Diggs ended a game, but they didn't go on to win a championship.
No.
The Alabama pass resulted in the championship. And then there were a bunch of dopey high school plays that I didn't care about. And there were a couple of LeBron plays, and I remember screaming into the set, you know, hold page one, LeBron's good. I mean, you know, stop already.
Kelly Oubre?
You know, no, he didn't make it. Right. But they didn't have the Holtby play.
We have
the stick.
Yeah, we have the stick that made the save.
We have the stick that made the save that won the Stanley Cup.
Allegedly. Yeah.
They didn't have that. So that was disappointing to me. Wilbon laughed at me because every chance I could on every single category that Ovechkin or the Capitals were in, I voted for them. Because
for
I voted my own self-interest that. But I would think that the in most important, best team of the year, I voted for the Capitals, but I think that Wilbon voted for the Houston Astros. And his rationale was, it's a very good rationale, they beat the Blue Bloods. They beat the Red Sox. They beat the Yankees. They beat the Dodgers. They had a great run. They won a lot of games. When Verlander joined that team, they put him over the top. And Altuve's 5'2".
Yeah.
I mean, Altuve, the bat is bigger than Altuve, and he hit .346 with 204 hits.
By the way, is having another killer.
Because he's great.
And they are now a blue blood, but having Verlander join in the 11th hour, I think, takes a little bit away from that team.
Not to me, because they just made their team better, and they won. They went out and won them.
And their city had been through a sort of a tragic deal with the storm.
But I also thought that I would have. I mean, if I hadn't been, you know, just laying down like a dog for the Capitals, the season, not just the season, the tournament that Villanova had. Villanova
totally
beat
dominant.
Teams. Villanova, in the Final Four, they won by 17 and 16. They had 3 wins over 20. They had nothing smaller than 13. I mean, that is a spectacular, spectacular season that Villanova had. In the same city, the Eagles, underdog in every single playoff game, playing with a second-string quarterback is not their guy.
And beat
those two teams, to me, right? They're undeniable
actually, they're
teams.
All great. It was the year
undeniable.
Of the team.
No, that was the category.
Oh, okay.
That was just the category. Best
they're
team.
All good teams. The play thing.
I even voted for Ovechkin as player of the year. Well, I can't get away with that, but I did.
Yeah, why not?
What were you going
to
say?
The play thing is odd to me because, and I'm embarrassed to admit this, obviously I saw it. I don't remember the Tua play. So for me,
for the national championship?
Yeah,
I don't remember it. So, okay, I watched it, but I don't remember.
Okay. Right, I remember. So, wouldn't that immediately disqualify?
I remember the Keenum thing much more.
Right.
Though I get your point about the stakes.
Yes. Yeah. Well,
you would argue it's not a bigger deal. You would argue the national championship.
Well, the NFL is a bigger deal. Right. The NFL playoffs.
But the Tua play, if it was in the overtime situation, it was a shorter field. You know, it was less of an oh my god. I mean,
well,
they're in the strike
to
zone.
To me, but here's what happened.
But I don't even remember.
And maybe I'm going too deep in the weeds on this. The fact that Nick Saban pulled the quarterback, and put this freshman in, he pulled Jalen Hurts, who had taken him to two straight national championships.
26 and 2 over a record.
I don't know that he'd taken them to two straight, but he was the quarterback when they went to them. Yeah.
So I just thought for a guy like Nick Saban, you know, I didn't expect to see that.
Yeah,
but there's no other play out there that comes close to these plays, with one exception. There was the kid, Jordan Peele, I guess his name is. Is it Jordan Peele?
Michigan kid
who hit the shot that Michigan was out of the tournament.
Oh, yeah, they were out of the
tournament.
They were
out of the tournament. The kid hit a shot,
and then they
end up, you know, in the championship game. But those two football plays by far were bigger plays to me.
Didn't you make a birdie at 13 at Columbia?
I just wouldn't. Yes, I wouldn't. I wouldn't think that those are big plays, honestly. They weren't, you know.
Wasn't caught on video is the only reason you didn't win.
No. That's the point.
So, I would ask you to watch this show, but I don't care. You don't have to watch the show. Nobody's going to watch the show. If we got paid by the amount of people who actually watch the show,
we'd promote the show.
Yeah, I would care a lot more. You know, but we don't. So it doesn't matter. Okay, does anybody have anything else to add, or can we move on?
We can move on.
All right, so we will come back with a jingle, and we will come back with email.
Oh, yes, this is a jingle by Patrick Moffitt about your love of Discmans.
I like Discmans.
Well, you'll love this song.
A Walkman. Are they the same?
No. Walkman is
Walkman's
a tape
cassette
player.
Cassette. And a Discman would,
Discman would be a
CD.
Okay.
Yes,
call
back.
I'm all of which both are
stupid,
you can
and
find
Tony
them both
Kornheiser
in a museum.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
If you're playing CDs like it's 1993, Discman. If you want some extra juice, just turn on that bass boost, Discman.
Remember that button? Bass boost.
You'll need 8 AA's to keep playing your Discman.
This is Pence Patrick Moffitt. This is really good.
You can put it all on your phone, but you can't turn it on, Discman. If you're out walking the dog, turn that shuffle on.
Next line is fantastic.
You need extra Frisbees for Jesse. Discman.
So good.
It does have shock protection.
Oh, very good. Brilliant. Before we get to the mailbag, let me thank Abby Lowell, the smartest man in Washington, for coming on with us today. Let me thank our sponsors, Buffalo Trace Bourbon and Sonos. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of the Tony Kornheiser Show wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Play. And if you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. Does the baby boy Bootsy want to speak into the microphone?
Walkman, do you want to say hi? Okay. I was a little shy.
Yeah. Oh! Oh! Nailed it.
Okay, we got to get him a SAG after
call. Got a replacement for me.
Kevin Disher, Bay City, Michigan. The image of a Brit high-stepping it out of the eastern woods in an attempt to avoid a sneak attack is priceless. Don't tread on us.
Yeah,
Nigel.
Very true.
From Jim Flynn in Colebrook, Connecticut. Tony, for the months of July and August, when I want to hear something irritating, I'll have to start my own leaf blower. We're gonna be on occasionally.
Yeah.
We're just not going to be on, you know, four and 5 days a week.
Yes.
Rick from Manassas, Virginia. I live close in Manassas, Virginia. Drive 10 minutes to see cows. I need to drive 10 minutes to get away from the cows.
Mm.
Josh Cromwell, Moselle, Mississippi. You're 100% right about the Cars for Kids jingle. Every time I hear it, I change the lyrics to 1-877 kill me now, CILL kill me now, 1-877 kill me now, so the song goes away. From Steve the Sycophant, Nigel's encounter with the snake of indeterminate length reminds me of my snake adventures in the George Washington Forest in Southern Virginia. On a hot summer day, my wife and I took a dip in the lake by our campsite. While enjoying the cool water, I suddenly noticed several snakes swimming alongside.
Oh,
calmly
my gosh.
Screaming, "Snakes!" I thrashed my way to shore behind my wife. Once on land, we decided the fellow swimmers were black snakes, and from then on referred to Black Snake Lake and quit swimming there. Mm-hmm. On a later trip, walking along the lake on a cold autumn morning, we found a large rattlesnake tightly coiled in the middle of the trail. The cold made the snake almost comatose, and my wife told me to poke it with a pick so she could photograph it uncoiled.
No.
Like an idiot, I poked away. She got the shot, only to have the photo be out
of
focus.
For the gram.
To top that, on a later hike the same day, I stepped on some leaves and realized there was a snake under my foot.
Wow.
I set a world record for jumping straight up, going sideways in the air, and landing well away from the snake. Why do you keep walking and swimming where you've seen... Why would
snakes
anybody do
in
that?
Water are scary.
There's a snake in my
very
boot.
Scary.
Ed Butt, who was here over the weekend, do you have cows in your backyard, was one of the questions my daughter received when she went to Lafayette College, where a majority of the students had never met anyone from the Midwest. Having handled lawsuits back east, I'd have prepared her with a few comebacks. How many people live in your county? Well, 5.5 million live in mine. And do you think Long Island Sound is a major body of water? Of course. Well, Lake Michigan is 10 times its size. Finally, as an aside, but as proof of another point, my daughter still lives in Lehigh Valley of Pennsylvania. Whenever it snows, her friends always want Julie to drive because she grew up driving in real winter weather. So she picks everyone up in her Subaru, and Wilbon won't be surprised. Oh. We got to go to the Lehigh Valley. We got to play Saucon Valley. We've got to make a weekend trip to do that. Somebody called Charlie. Adam Benson.
Charlie!
Adam Benson in St. John's in Newfoundland, where Cliffy's
the Cliffy
from.
Was, yes.
Thank you for having Cliffy on the show. I live in St. John's, Newfoundland, and it was very nice to hear my hometown and province talked about with such respect. My parents live in Gander, and they had snow on Tuesday.
Wow. Is Gander Mountain that... Yeah. Must be the outerwear company too.
Well, I don't know, but it's the Air Force base. You Take have a few littles who live in Newfoundland, and I've connected with some through your show, thanks to the podcast and Edith Saliza.
Yeah.
David Marshall in Silver Spring. This is what Dusty is saying to the Nationals: since one, a new manager will use analytics to change the lineup every day, and two, what they really needed was the hitting coach for the Mets. Now they are shutout city. They are.
Again, check the subject line.
Oh, wire quote from Bunk Moreland to McNulty. Oh, that's in
From the Wire.
Season one. Okay. Vladimir, you were amazed from your PTI intern Cliffy that Canada was so vast. I'm sure you don't recall since you were still in your swaddling clothes, but back then in 1867 during the Johnson administration, that's Andrew Johnson, Grandpa, Alaska became a territory of the United States and a state just 92 years later. Alaska is so vast that we had four time zones all to ourselves until the early 80s when we contracted to two because it's a little ridiculous to have one state's capital at best a time zone away. Include our fellow territory Hawaii in the United States has six time zones. So put that in Canada's hat and smoke it. Insignificantly yours, Vladimir, born and bred Alaskan, unlike Anita from Alaska. Yeah.
Tony was talking Conus.
No need to take a shot at Anita.
Yeah, now we love Anita. Conus.
I mean, is that Anita's... Putin?
But
Vladimir?
I think, so Alaska is bigger than Canada? I don't believe that, is it?
Let's ask the internet while
is
you're
it?
Eating.
No,
really?
No, it's not.
I can't be that right. Sounds false.
Bill Isaacson, on the subject of Bootsy's future birthday parties, please tell Michael he may need to be careful. One day Michael will find himself, as I did, watching his son at an open mic night at a rundown comedy club saying, "My goal in life is to have sex based on my childhood birthday parties. Pirate sex. Dinosaur sex." This may be a little much for an email for the show, but Michael needs the warning. Just ask Nigel's parents. Those innocent years fly by quickly. One other word of advice for Michael and Bootsy. Stay away from Tori's camel parties. Bill Isaacson, Palo Alto, and then to Chicago, and missing the last week of the
Canada
podcast
bigger,
season.
By the way.
That's what I would have thought. Yeah. And that's what I did think. If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
Stop the hammering. Stop the hammering out there. Who's got a hammer?
I will call Bill Griffin.
Where's the hammer? Is it on
is
the
floor?
Is
it down here?
Stop the hammering.
Where is it?
Stop
people from Singapore today.
Oh, lovely.
From Singapore.
Lovely. We'll be right back.
to your knees. You are the madness I keep looking for. Each time you disappear, I crawl back and crawl. What's the use in mine? Move on this way. No grace chasing yesterday. You crossed this line. No love for the left behind. Bang, bang, lay down. Get you on my side of town. Now mama don't cry, but she still tells lies and she'll never come home to you. Let's run away. But she still tells lies and she'll never come home to you.